Don't go to sleep on me, now, Rama said. You have to be fully awake and conscious so you can tell me what you see and hear. I can't, I have this heavy impulse to close my eyes. Maybe you need an object to train your eyes on to keep them open. Rama placed the microphone of the recorder, which was metallic and round at the base, directly in front of me. I started concentrating on the shiny object until it seemed as if it were a great sphere about 4 times my height in diameter. Meanwhile, Rama was making sure I didn't close my eyes. At first, I heard voices without fully understanding what they were saying. Then a very clear voice began speaking to me. I understood the voice, but I couldn't get any meaning out of the words. Rama told me the voice I was hearing was one spirit in the universe that was going to be my guide for the day. I didn't see anybody in spiritual form near me, but I could clearly hear the voice. I must have said something to answer the spiritual guide. I don't know, but I feel I'm very far away from my body. Yes, the voice said, you're many thousands of miles away from the earth. Are you afraid? Afraid of what? I've done this sort of thing many times. Rama asked me if I knew or if I could see who was guiding me. No, I don't see anybody. You will see him very soon. I can hear his voice. He's asking me if I remember ever knowing anything about Saint Jude, the patron saint of the impossibles. Why don't you answer him? My spiritual guide says the spirits in the cosmos are constantly at work. He says it's necessary to ease me into the situation, because I'm about to enter the atmosphere of another planet. Soon I'll arrive at my destination, then I'll start saying some very important things. I didn't feel any movement as I had the day before when I was out in space. It simply felt as though I were inside a dark place where there was no entrance or exit. I couldn't hear or see anything. Finally, I could hear my guide saying that we were in our way to the planet Mars where we would find some cosmic archives. For a few moments there was dead silence in which I could only hear the recording going in what sounded like a train passing by. There were no voices, and I was about to say something when I felt some force take possession of my body and spirit. Even though I was out in space, I was also aware of what was happening to my physical body. The silence lasted about 5 minutes. Maybe more. I began shaking my head. Rama said later that she began to get worried at this point, but she didn't say anything because I started talking then. I'm getting out of the darkness, I can still see this great white disc, but now it's so huge inside that there's something that really excites me. I can see a world coming towards me at great speed. Is that the Earth? No, answered my guide, it's the planet Mars. Why did I feel this terrible impact? This is to be expected when you enter the attractional forces of any celestial body in space. I've had this sensation a couple of times before, but not quite as abruptly as it was just now. It seemed as if my whole physical body was doing the astral traveling. Wow, this is so real that I know when I come back into my body I'll have 100% recollection of this whole trip. I can even use my hands and mouth. While I was saying this I was still touching the sphere, the microphone, feeling the chrome metal part of it. I saw a light blue planet coming at great speed and in a few moments I felt I wouldn't be able to fit inside this white disc. Don't worry, my spiritual guide said. We're already inside the atmosphere of this world. Ah, this is a pleasant sensation. I feel happy. It seems to me that we're about to touch the surface. Yes, we're already on firm ground. It was like a garden. I could see a few people at a distance. My guide was pleasant looking, I was getting good vibrations from him, and there seemed to be a pale light glowing all around him. He came close to me and put his hand on my shoulder, but it was difficult to understand what he was saying. He seemed to be having a good time, but his laughter was caused by something mutually funny because we both laughed. Strangely enough, though, I didn't know why I was amused. Rama spoke to me then, saying it would be wise for me to practice this form of astral projection because after a while the images wouldn't be as blurry as they were this time. Rama, I can hear what you're telling me, But I can get all the benefits of sensing what's going on around me as if I had my body with me. I felt the man's hand on my shoulder. I feel the temperature and the breeze on my face. It seems colder than our temperature on Earth. I am walking in front of a fountain with some kind of water spring in a garden-like place. What else is around you? Rama asked. I'm glad you asked, because I've just become aware that there are other spirits nearby. I don't know what they're doing, but they seem a bit curious about my presence. This place is great, peaceful and inspiring. It's inviting me to think. Wow! I don't think these spirits like being called curious too much. My guide says, these are spirits that come from all parts of the universe and that they always accompany him. He says those spirits are also in training. Can you still see the great disc? Yes. It has changed. It's gigantic. I'm getting the perception of these mental images and spirits inside the sphere now. Rama told me that if I wanted to ask my guide anything, this would be an opportunity to learn about the cosmic laws associated with astral travel. Nothing came to my mind. It was clouded with confusion and surprise. The trip was so new and exciting that I couldn't think straight. Finally, I asked my guide, how are the angels? Generally, the angels are spirits in the universe, but there's no such thing as beings with wings attached to their backs. What happens in your world is that the word and meaning of angel has degenerated. I take it you are a language expert on Earth? Yes, sir, I am. Do you know the etymology of such a word? I think it comes from the Greek word angelos, meaning messenger. That's what the angels of your holy scriptures were. Regardless of how much they have evolved in their cosmic progress, I want you to know that in your world they have been present ever since the beginning, cultivating your planet with spiritual teachings. And what about my friend Rama? She claims she is from another world other than the Earth. She's a space traveler, but she's also a very old spirit that has been making many types of announcements to your world. Her real name is Ramatis. Ramatis? Is Ramatis a spirit or an incarnation? The spirit of Ramatis lives in the body of the little girl who is now next to you on the Earth. Then her spirit and physical body are now on Earth? Yes, he said. When Ramatis goes to other worlds and her physical body is on a certain planet, what you see are her ananas and anionites reflected at a distance, not a real physical body. You see lots of spirits here, but they are nothing but energy, there are no atoms in us. What about you, sir? Do you have a physical body waiting for you somewhere right now? No, I do not. I can incarnate only for a limited amount of time, and send messages anywhere in the universe. When I am seen by someone, it's usually in the form of a spirit or a ghost, if you prefer to call it that. In the early days of your world, these angels were given a mythological personality. Some were giants, and some took a human form and visited the Earth to teach the cosmic facts about God and creation. You must also be aware that two kinds of angels exist, some good and some bad. Those in your world are better known as devils or demons. When these spirits leave a physical body, they go into the cosmos. But if they haven't acted according to the teachings of the eternal God of creation, they're restored in their structure and sent back to the world to relearn. Your spirit has lived many times before, but you can't remember all your previous incarnations because that's a defense mechanism a spirit has. It chose to forget in order not to spoil any future plans. But if it is necessary, it can remember when it reaches maturity. You must understand that it would be very tedious, and no help of any kind, if a spirit would be constantly remembering that in one incarnation it killed its mother or perhaps its brother or in some other life it was killed by someone. The suffering a spirit undergoes is a way to purge itself of its wrongdoings. Some religions in your world call this process karma. Certain spirits incarnate constantly with the mission of learning to control their criminal instincts and to create a universal fraternity, to study and make progress. The ones who accomplish their mission get an A and continue on to another plane. The ones who don't, get an F and they have to start all over again. As soon as my guide in the cosmos had finished telling me this, I heard Rama's voice again. Chicho, are those the words that were said to you? No, but I'm doing my best to say it the way those thoughts came to me from my guide. There's certainly a new kind of language in my head at this moment. What do you think of the contents of what was being put into your head? The only thing I can say is that if we take a few moments to analyze the situation, we would see that things are so bad in my world that it's certainly possible that a great part of the human race is going to get a massive F, and when they die they'll have to start all over again, spiritually, that is. Don't worry about the people who won't believe you. Because as you can see, there's only a minority group of souls who are going to be getting an A and move on to other planes in the cosmos. Before I had a chance to ask any more questions, my spiritual guide finished the visit by saying that the purpose of it was mainly to show me how some spirits are, prior to being reincarnated on Earth or any other planet. His final words were to the effect that there is not a single spirit incarnated on the world who cannot benefit from these teachings. He said whoever wants to expand his or her knowledge must think of their human bodies as nothing more than a temple where a spirit can be cultivated. The first step in that cultivation, he said, is astral projection. Returning to my body wasn't as confusing as it was getting out of it. I could see the light blue disc that was Mars getting smaller and smaller. I don't even remember taking off, or at what point my guide left me. I could see him, but I couldn't see the other spirits who were following him. Then I saw the earth and felt excited. I couldn't wait to see Rama. It was getting bigger, then all of a sudden, I could feel the density of its atmosphere. It was heavy and thick, I could smell the contamination of the atmosphere, it almost stunk. A few seconds later, I was aware of Rama holding me. There was plenty of light in the room now. Rama was grinning with satisfaction. The first thing I did was to rewind the tape recorder. It was already past the middle of the second side of the cassette. We both got out of the water. It was a little past 10 in the morning. I was starving, because the longer one stays in the water, the hungrier one gets. As we started to walk up the hill to go to the dining room, Rama told me she was very pleased with my performance and that there was no reason why I couldn't write about these experiences and share the promise of eternal life. Later that day, after Rama and I finished the session, she told me that at the beginning I was rubbing the microphone with my fingers. Rama put a pencil in my right hand and I wrote on a piece of paper, "I will remember what I see and hear." She said that during the trip my face had not looked normal, that my facial expression had been distorted and my eyes lost their shine. When I spoke, my movements had been those of a robot, as if all the actions in my physical body were being maneuvered only by the speck of energy coming to my body through my silver cord. After breakfast we both took a ride on the patrol bike, and spent most of the day making a recompilation of all the things I'd learned ever since the day we met each other. By the time we were back in the Kaiyu it was dusk. We hid the motorcycle in the back of the hotel and walked to the river where we sat near the open swimming pool and waited for complete darkness. Rama said that the sky was going to be our movie screen. She was going to put on a show for me so I could understand visually what she was telling me all day about the balance of the universe. While we waited for complete darkness, she told me that at one time we thought the world was flat, then we thought we were the center of the universe. Until Galileo Galilei in 1551 discovered that we were only one speck in a vast universe and that it was the Earth that rotated around the Sun. When it was completely dark, Rama said, "Did you know that our solar system and many others like it, go around and around, and that the center of the rotation is the star Alcyone in the Pleiades?" "Oh, I didn't know that, but now that you mention it, I do seem to remember something about it. Let's see it." The pitch black of night was like a gigantic blackboard. I stared at the sky until I got to the point of actually seeing the Pleiades and how the Alcyone star was the center of gravity for many solar systems, including our own. It was like seeing a movie on a screen. I wanted to reason why and how it was happening, but Rama motioned to skip the trivia and to concentrate on what I was seeing. As she pointed at the stars in heaven, I could see nothing around me except the white lines and circles that brought out the shape of a constellation. The same feeling you get at the planetarium in London or Washington or Disneyland. I could see the stars and dotted circles that Rama was drawing as she spoke. The illustrations were very clear and actually moved. In about 2 hours I had a complete view of our solar system in relation to the universe, how a system is born, destroyed, and how it goes through evolutionary changes. I saw how certain forces that can in fact upset the balance of the universe. I was aware of sound out in space, sounds that would not be recorded until 1976 by some 27 stations built somewhere in the world. I saw a planet that existed somewhere between Jupiter and Mars disintegrated into cosmic dust. Rama told me that if I wanted to, I could call this experience astral projection. No doubt about it, it was a fantastic trip, fraught with solid, valid astronomical information that has passed the most skeptical checking by this author in these past few years. Since this was our last evening together, we went to a little goodbye party. A few people were having a family reunion and we had been invited. Seeing Rama's interaction with those people gave me a warm and comfortable feeling. She was simple and sweet. We ate, sang, and danced until it was time to retire for the night. The next morning, Friday, I got up early to get my things together. I was returning to Lima that day. About an hour later, Rama met me for a swim and we had breakfast together. I asked Rama all kinds of questions about the book I was to write. As always, her answers were sincere and full of common sense. "Rama," I said, "let's imagine that you people are ready to take your 144,000 people. Give me some idea how you would accomplish such a thing. First of all, those 144,000 people would already understand the rules. They would know what is required to get a one-way ticket on that boat. Would they all go in one trip? No, out of necessity it would be a gradual thing. A few thousand at a time. But your planet is in such turmoil right now that no one knows what might happen next. If we had to, we could arrange to have everyone together in no time. But how? We have many ways. Bear in mind that we're not alone. There are angels from Venus, Neptune, Ganymede and many other places working on this. This is a joint effort to save your humanity and to come back and populate the Earth for the next 6,000 years after the 17th of September, 2001. It would be something like the angels coming to Lot before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, Noah being instructed to build his ark and saw, yes, that I understand. But how can we make this fit in with the second half of the 20th century? There are people in your world who can gather large audiences. Your great rock and roll groups, for instance. A live concert of the Beatles could draw 50 to 70,000 people without any problems, right? There is a man in Boston who can give a concert that could attract a crowd of 150,000. Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops. Yes, a single concert of his attracts a lot of people. Take the Rose Bowl, the British rock groups. What would happen at one of these events? After the high draw personality or group had performed, someone would announce that so-and-so is going to be appearing the following month. Maybe along with that person, someone popular would also be appearing. Let me ask you, if someone had come to tell you 6 months ago that Christ would be speaking at Madison Square Garden, would you have gone? No. You see, you could have missed the boat. What sort of preparation do we need to understand when the time has come? You know the rules: knowledge of God, helping and loving one another, faith to understand. You have to accept that Christ is the mastermind of the details of 144 Earth rescue. There will be no pattern. Remember what the scripture said about the Lord moving in mysterious ways. You just read where it said he may come as a thief. When you accept this, then you love your fellow human beings out of conviction, because you know there was someone great willing to die just to prove the point. What point was that? In order to enter the kingdom of eternal life, you have to be born again. In the Bible it says that these 144,000 will know and understand a tune, a melody. It says a song in Revelation 14:3. Could this be something a lot of people turn onto, like a new fad, a new kind of music, a new belief? Like what? To know Christ is to practice his teachings. What happens if you die before the 144,000 boat leaves? If you have Christ with you already, then your spirit will vibrate evenly. You can die any time and you don't suffer one bit because you're prepared to take your Ananias and Ananias into the next plane. The fourth dimension. If a bomb were to explode here now, all we would have to do is channel our spirits to other dimensions. This time, however, our soul would not have any connections with our bodies. When the silver cord breaks, we'll be able to remember all our past incarnations. You and many like you are going to have this built-in frequency of being in tune with the gods. You may pick up thoughts of eternal cosmic revelations. The same kind Daniel, Saint John, Ezekiel, Moses and others had when they were guided by angels in their visions and prophecies. This is a similar phenomena, you're talking to an angel, just as Ezekiel or Daniel were. That doesn't make me a prophet, though. But these happenings repeat themselves. The gods of Ezekiel gave him a scroll to eat and fill his bowels, telling him to go and talk to the people of Israel, Ezekiel 3:1-3. I remember reading his experiences. It reminded me of something like kissing the Blarney Stone. In the days of Ezekiel, your account of what's happening here could have made it to the Bible. Of course, we're not adding to or subtracting from what the Bible says, we're using it as an academic and scientific guide. As far as giving you a scroll to eat, I won't do that, but I will give you this. She placed a metal band around my left wrist. Couldn't tell what kind of metal it was, but it looked like the power bands people had worn during the Vietnam War. As she adjusted it, she said, "This is plain stainless steel. No one would want to steal it from you. You can get these at any store for 65 cents. This one has a special electromagnetic charge that is tuned into your personal vibrations. Am I supposed to feel anything, experience changes? You may have a skin rash for a few days while the radiation is absorbed. You've seen the copper bracelets people wear for health reasons? You are. There are also a couple of my vibrations in there. Many times you will hear me think. Since this is steel, it will keep away evil forces." "What do you mean?" "Evil forces are also third energy, and are potentially very powerful. Witchcraft, voodoo, jinxes, curses, vampires, all these can be repelled by steel. I was going to give you a steel cross, but was afraid you'd hit me and call me a Jesus freak. You know I'm polite. Anyway, getting back to this big event you might stage. Does that mean the 144,000 are going to be waiting already for some kind of special event? Among themselves, they'll be saying, hey, on such and such a day we'll meet at such and such a place. That's right, it's like having a date. A date with the gods. Hey, not a bad title for a book. Wear this bracelet night and day, and we already have a date. It won't bother you. You can swim with it on, sleep, make love, do whatever you have to. It'll stay the same. So we have a date, huh? When? It's entirely up to you. We got up then and paid our restaurant bill. Rama walked me to the car. We said goodbye with the assurance that we would see each other again. I drove back to Lima on a beautiful clear day. As I passed the UFO contact sign in Tiglio, I saw a flying disc hovering over me, traveling at the same speed as my rented VW. Under it was a patrol motorcycle, hanging from two cables. I blew a kiss to it, and said, "So long, Romatis." Next day, Saturday, September 28, I spent with friends, taking care of some last-minute shopping, packing and getting ready to leave Peru. The atmosphere was tense, as preparations for the October 3 celebration got underway. I was very happy to be leaving Peru. At 7 o'clock Sunday morning I took off on Air Panama, flight number 102 to Miami, Florida. I sat next to Raul Lefkovich, an old Latin American motion picture supervisor, who was headquartered in Mexico City. He was going from Lima to Panama. While in flight, we considered the possibilities of coming back to Peru together to release certain flicks. We made tentative plans to meet either in New York or Mexico City in the coming months. After he got off in Panama, I started thinking about what Rama said would happen if I made my images with shape, color and movement. My chances of getting the thought to materialize were good if I continued doing this, acting in good faith, and taking the initial steps to accomplish my goal. This could be a good time to start. Upon arriving in Miami, I met with my business partners. They took me to a hotel in Miami Beach. Early the next day, we went to the Miami quarantine station to take some horses to a ranch near Fort Lauderdale. I rented a car at Dania Airport, and hit every existing library in the area, looking for some proof to corroborate my incredible experiences in the Andes Mountains. During the day, for a week, I read all kinds of books on UFOs. Mostly scientific reports. The more I read and discussed the subject with people during that first week in the United States, the more convinced I became that there is only a very small segment of the population that doesn't believe UFOs exist. This was encouragement to write the book. After I saw Rama's vimana hovering over me the day I left Peru, and 1 week's investigations on UFOs, I didn't waste any more time inquiring about aerospatial phenomena. I was convinced that they did exist and decided that Rama was probably legitimate. On Thursday, October 3rd, about mid-morning, while horseback riding, I saw one of the Peruvian horse trainers waving and calling to me, excitedly. He told me that he'd just heard on the radio that Peru was hit by a severe earthquake. He added, jokingly, that the president of Peru promised to have the people out on the streets to cheer him, but not quite that early in the morning. I thanked him for the news and sat there on my horse, perplexed. Rama knew it. She'd said she was going to conduct geological studies in the southern part of Peru. Later I learned that the epicenter of the earthquake was in the southern part of Peru. With all that, the only thing I could do was continue with my research. No doubt this girl, whoever she was, knew something I didn't, and yet she was very willing to share that knowledge. In mid-October, we headed for Swanton, Ohio, where a Peruvian horse sale was scheduled toward the end of that month. That gave me a couple of weeks to start the second phase of my research to find historical and scientific evidence as to the teachings Rama had given me. The place in Ohio was a Peruvian horse ranch. I'd met the owner in June before going to Peru. Roy was also an oil perforation man, who enjoyed life, and who seemed like a very nice chap. In the next few days we got to be very close. We spent hours and hours talking. He was the first one I spoke to about my experience in the Andes Mountains. He seemed to listen, made intelligent comments and asked relevant questions. Many evenings we stayed up until 2 or 3 in the morning, talking. I got to meet many of his friends and family. In less than a month, I had managed to read everyone's palm. Everyone was impressed with my accuracy, and how I was able to do it. According to Rama, I had learned to vibrate with the people I came in contact with. I could feel their emotions, their troubles, their fears, as soon as I touched their hands. It was lots of fun. During my stay in Ohio, Roy expressed a sincere desire to go to Peru. He wanted to purchase some Peruvian horses. I told him that if I could be of any help, I was available right then. By the time I left Ohio, I had not only gleaned a great deal of information about God as a third force but also about a potential deal in the works that might be an answer to my prayer to go back to Peru and see Rama again. I was reluctant to go back to Beverly Hills, knowing I might be arrested, but decided to go anyway. I tried calling a few friends, but my telephone had been disconnected, my mail had accumulated all over my desk, 5 months of it. Lots of bills and notes from my creditors. Later that evening, I went to a friend's house, not too far from there. He gave me the phone number of my old gal friend who had gotten sick and tired of waiting for me and had gotten married while I was in Peru.